Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our newest episode of Educators Grow. I am excited for you to join us again. Our lucky 13th episode, by the way. So just a reminder, my name is John Wozniak. I am your host of this podcast. I am the proud principal of an amazing group of students, staff, and families, Covington Elementary School in Oak Lawn, Illinois. And I am excited about our guest this week that is going to be joining us. Our guest is a fifth grade teacher.
Seventh
grade. Oh my gosh. I apologize on that one. There she is. I first saw her at the ICE conference, or the Illinois Computing Educators Conference, in 2016. And she started talking about some incredible ideas, specifically Genius Hour, that just made me, it was a Friday. It was a late Friday. I want to say about 5 o'clock, and it made me want to go home and just read and research. And I just think, me personally, when I leave a conference and I want to go home and I want to research more about the topics of the conference, that's a pretty good conference to me. So she is also the author of an amazing book that I believe came out not long after I saw her at ICE.
Yeah.
Shift This. So with that being said, I will let our guest introduce herself now.
Well, hello, John. It's good to see you again. I remember you coming up to me afterwards mm-hmm. and that one and saying thank you for the live binder. So mm-hmm. maybe that was a year later that I saw you there in person that you said, hey, hi. Mm-hmm. That's good to meet you then. Seventh grade ELA since 2009, but I've done stuff before that in education as well. But I love the seventh grade. That age is just so perfect.
Mm-hmm. I only had a chance to teach seventh grade for 1 year. I was a middle school teacher for 11. I taught seventh grade for 1 year, and I couldn't believe the difference between sixth graders and seventh graders.
Yeah, and then seventh and eighth graders. Like, seventh grade's a sweet spot.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that was the thing. Nothing against sixth grade. I enjoyed it. But that 1 year of seventh grade, I feel like I enjoyed more than all my years of sixth grade. I never had a chance to teach eighth grade, but everybody always thought of like those seventh graders, like that middle child. But I always looked at it as like a good thing. I just thought they were in such an interesting place. And like you said, like that sweet spot right there.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you very much for joining. I appreciate it. I have the honor of been following you and kind of knowing you as well for several years now. And I just appreciate you taking some time to join us on our podcast today.
Of course. You're doing some good stuff over there. I like lucky number 13. Let's go.
All right. There you go. Well, let's just get started. So the first question, I always lead off with this question. It's my favorite question I ask everybody. Reflecting back and thinking back, what are three words you would use to describe yourself in your first year in education? And then what are three words you would use to describe yourself now?
So petrified. The first years, eager and organized. I was an organization freak. I drove out of my truck. I drove to different schools for my hearing itinerant job. And so I had to be organized. And now I'd say petrified, driven, and happy. Like, I am very content with the things I can try. And I'm excited to go in every day, but I'm still petrified that I'm not going to do my best. You know, like, I'm going to mess up somehow, some way, during the day, but I'm driven to do better. So that's good.
I always find it interesting when somebody has a word that's the same as their first year and then now, and your common word was petrified. Mm-hmm. And thank you for explaining that a little bit at the end right there. I think that when I reflect back to my first year, that's the hardest thing for me to admit, that I was scared or I was petrified mm-hmm. at the beginning. Now, would you say the feeling of petrified is a little bit different now as before, or is it kind of like the same reasoning you think?
No, it's different now, because before it was making sure, because I was driving between schools, so making sure I didn't get into an accident, didn't get a ticket, got there on time, got the right student, had all my supplies. You know, now it's more, you know, am I going to do what's right? You know, I feel like I have plans. I know they can go wrong, but what if I say something wrong? You know, or what if I call somebody a different name, or, you know, just little things that just make me feel now like I should know this by now, so mm-hmm. I should be better. But yeah, and it's not petrified, I guess, but it's still scared.
Oh, that's understandable. That's understandable for sure. I mean, I think that we all go into all the days wanting to do our best. And, you know, as we talk more and more about, you know, having a growth mindset and, you know, knowing that mistakes are, I think one of the most common things we say are, you know, mistakes aren't bad things, but, you know, I don't know if it's easy for us to embrace them necessarily. You know?
Right, right. But it's good. It drives me forward. It's okay.
So how long were you an itinerant for? My wife actually just started this past year as an itinerant for her. She's just been it for a few months, though. How long were you an itinerant?
7 years. Wow. It was actually 5, because somewhere in there, like the first year, it was part-time itinerant, and then it was 2 years at a Montessori school,
okay.
And then I went back to itinerant after that. Yeah, it was deaf and hard of hearing, and there aren't a lot of deaf and hard of hearing students around, so you have to find them where they are, and then I would pull them out or push in, you know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, that's what she does. She works with visually impaired students, though.
Yeah.
So, fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, so, again, kind of a reflection or thinking back, are there any practices that you did as a newer teacher that you've changed over the time? And if so, what are some things that have caused that change?
Okay, we'll go with the big one. Grading. And I, you know, going to that itinerant, the first 14 years of my teaching, so my next 7 were as a reading specialist, I didn't use grades ever. Mm-hmm. You know, for 14 years, I used goals, and we continually made new goals as students learned. And then I went into the ELA classroom in 2009 and graded everything, just like I'd experienced in my own school years. And what caused it? Too much grading. I think it was just too much time outside of school and too much paperwork. And I was always bringing home things. And I had so many grades in the grade book because, you know, you can never have enough grades because that'll be more representative of what they know. And, oh, it was crazy. I noticed that other teachers didn't take so much work home with them, and I was a little envious. And so since I met Rick Wormley, I think in 2014, I met him at my district, and he was talking about standards-based grading, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I've been doing everything wrong. I need to cut down on the grades I put in. I need them to be able to revise and forget about late work and forget about extra credit, and everything is totally revamped, you know, since then. And it's, I feel like we're more focused on the learning now instead of that number or letter. So that's a good change, yeah.
I think one of the biggest things that you said right there that really stuck with me is you said the phrase, just like I experienced. Because when we were younger, you know, grades, and I'll be honest, I remember when I was younger, I remember thinking, hey, this isn't what I'm learning. I remember thinking, I need to get an A on this.
Uh-huh.
You know, so even then I'm thinking, you know, what was my focus at the time?
Right.
And then if that was the case for me, what do I want my students to be their focus of?
Right. And when students are asking you, well, how much is this worth? They're really asking, how much effort am I going to put into it?
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely. Like, oh my gosh, you know, so now they don't ask me because I don't put marks or points on anything. And they don't ask me, is this for a grade? They just do it. We just do what we're supposed to do. We do it for learning's sake. And I put some narrative feedback in that grade book. And it's all like, okay, we're just going to do it. And yeah, you can still decide to put effort into it or not. Mm-hmm. But they're not asking me about the points. And they're not asking me, how can I make this to an A minus? How can I do this for this grade? It's all about, you know, what did I do here? And did I do it okay? And what can I do to make it better? And so much easier on my heart and my head for these conversations to go on.
And then I've always felt, and I mean, I'm sure there's reason behind this. I'm not completely sure what the psychological reasoning is yet, but when you take that grade away and you just go into that feedback and that narrative, and then when somebody makes a mistake or doesn't get something correct, yeah. I feel as though they're much more open towards trying it again. Because yeah. There's not that grade attached to it. There's not that different kind of motivation.
Right. And they look at the feedback you gave them because there's not a grade attached. You know, normally there's, I mean, I remember doing papers, they'd look at that top grade and that would be it. It would go in the garbage. And I'm like, what about all that stuff I wrote on it? You know, to help you. No, they're not going to look at it if you put that on there. But now they're looking at it. Mm-hmm. And then they're doing something about it. It's like, whoa. And it seems like more work for me, but it's work I love. It's good stuff, you know? Yeah.
I even remember when I started getting to the practice of allowing retests and retakes, you know, the students would still just look at that grade and the first thought, well, I don't have to retake this. I'm good, you know. And, you know, like just like you said, I would write narrative notes and I would spend so much time thinking about it, but they just wanted to see that letter or that percentage.
Yeah, yeah. And then how does it average in everything? Is that going to get me up further or is it going to bring me down? Yep.
Exactly. So I love that one. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So think about that. What is something in the field of education right now that you would love to learn more about?
It's social-emotional learning. I need to know more because we have so many students who struggle in so many ways. I had a student last year whose brother committed suicide the year before. And it's just like, I gotta know these kids now. You know, I have to know how they're doing every day. I have to feel them out. And we do have those quiet ones that don't say anything. And what's going on? You know, what's going on in their mind? So this year, I put up a big grid. It's got 4 quadrants and it's Which axis is which? Is it the y-axis that's vertical? And the x's, okay,
Oh.
so on the y-axis is energy. So either they're plus up to five energy or negative down to five energy. And then we have on the x-axis is pleasantness, you know, so how happy are you? And it again, it can go up to five or down to negative five. And when I see a student on the left side of that whole square, I know that they're not so happy for some reason. And either they're elevated and not so happy, or they're tired and not so happy. So I, boom, go to those kids right away. And that's been one step. And my next step now is to figure out activities for when they are all up and excited, you know, if we need to calm down. And if they are all low energy, if we need to be pumped up. So that's my next step. But it's gotten something. Like every now and then you'll have a kid in the lower left quadrant, and I'll say, "What's going on in your life? You know, why are you in that quadrant?" And they'll tell me, and it's so nice to have that conversation. And otherwise they would just sit there and just let it go on, you know. But if I don't attack it at the beginning of the period, that's what they're thinking of for the whole period. So that's been my next thing. I have to learn more about social emotional learning and how to connect with students and how to give them strategies to regulate themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an awesome first step, taking it, just recognizing. I think it's important for us to recognize that, you know, our students, you know, say we have 25 of them, are coming to us with something already. You know,
Right.
it's a new class for us, but they are bringing in whatever may happen, whether we don't know what happened before they came into our room. So being able to recognize that, and also having them trust you enough to let them know where they are on that grid, I think is an important thing as well.
Right. Yeah. I
And
got a
then,
shout out to Mark Brackett for that one. I saw him in Boston this past summer, and he does this ruler approach, it's called. And I forget what the RULER stands for, but the first one I think is to recognize where you are. You know, how are you feeling, and what is your energy level, and what's going on? So we're talking about the words too that go along with it. You know, there could be frustrated, there could be ticked off, it could be, you know, exasperated. So different words too to describe how you're feeling, other than just bad, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You said that was Mark Brackett.
Yep.
All right, sounds good. I'll have to look up some of this stuff because that's definitely something that I want to learn more and more about. I feel as though I have a decent amount of knowledge with that, but there's definitely always more to learn
More to learn.
as more comes out for sure. And there's a lot of people that are really knowledgeable from
Yeah.
to learn more about that. And it really one more thing about that, I really like that because if when I'm reflecting back to when I was in the class, sometimes I had students come in with something and I knew that they had something that was going on. I feel like as an early teacher, sometimes I took that very personally.
Yeah.
Like they were coming in and I would greet them, "Hi, good morning, how are you?" And they wouldn't bring that energy back. And what do you do? You know, why are you not giving me that respect? I am with you. I feel was something I did when I was very young. But then knowing, hey, this isn't something that they're doing against me. This is something that is affecting them. So I
Right.
love that. Do you have any just speaking of the SEL component of that, is there any other books or recommendations? I know Mark Brackett, that sounds like a really interesting one with that ruler concept. Anything else?
I did read one over the summer. Our school gave us, they offered it if we wanted it, which was awesome. So I always take free books. It's SEL for the middle school. I think that's what it's called. But it has different activities for, you know, this is the next step I was talking about. Different activities for if they are too excited or too low, like what you can do to help them out. And then our social workers use something, I don't know what it's called, but it's got four quadrants as well. It's just different colors and different meanings and something of regulation.
The zones of regulation?
Yes, they're using that one. So I looked quickly through that book and I copied some pages to read later. So that's my next one.
I was actually just talking to my social worker about that book last week, and I haven't really gotten into it too much, but we went through the first because there's some lessons in that one.
Right.
We were going through the first one, and I've seen a lot of people on Twitter talking about the different zones of regulation and kind of implementing that in their class. And it's kind of similar to one of the things that you were saying about your grid. Obviously, a little bit different because it's not necessarily measuring energy and pleasantness, but those different zones and kind of identifying how you're feeling and where you are and what you can do to like regulate them and get back to like
Yeah.
an area. And it's really good because it starts giving them tools to do so.
Right, on their own when we're not there. Yeah.
Exactly, because we're not always going to be there, right? All right. Well, thank you. So We preach to our students and others around us that mistakes aren't bad and that we can use them to learn. Will you share something that you've done, maybe a mistake or a failure, and what you've learned from it?
Yeah, so, you know, I got these questions early, everybody, so you know I'm prepared. But I was thinking, you know, there's so many mistakes. So I'm going to go with my most recent big, big mistake, okay? I made the mistake of getting into someone else's business. And this mistake, although I had my heart in the right place, has really turned me off now of gossip. And just mentioning it like this, does it make you want to know more? Right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, the unknown is alluring, and I'm not going to tell you what the big mistake was, but because it would be gossiping. And I think that that's one of the huge problems with gossip. Like, the unknown is alluring, like, and it's small boxes of teachers in close quarters, and it just invites gossip. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to not hear something about someone else that may or may not be true. And it happens. I'm not saying it happens often. Like, I don't know if it happens daily, weekly, or monthly. I have no clue. I haven't kept track. But it's often enough that it's toxic. And I'm learning how to walk away from it. Mm-hmm. And it can be tough to get up and leave a conversation, especially if it's with your friends, you know. And I've told them at the beginning of the year, I said, I'm going to try and just not say anything about anybody else that could be negative. And if you guys are talking about something, I might just get up. And I've told them this, but it's still hard for me to physically get up and go. And, you know, sometimes I'm tired and sometimes I just want to sit there for a couple more minutes. And sometimes I don't have that energy. So I try to ignore it, or I try to say something positive to derail it. And I'm constantly reminded of this mistake I made because I'm still hearing gossip, but I will never, ever make that mistake again.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, sharing that and being open and honest about that, I think, is wonderful. So I do appreciate you sharing that lesson that you've learned.
My heart was in the right place.
And absolutely.
I came home and I told my husband what happened. He's like, no. I'm like, yeah. And then this happened. And he's like, no. I'm like, yes. So it was a weekend of stomach churning, and I learned big time. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, the great thing about mistakes is that they stick with you, and you will learn for the next time, because the next, hopefully you won't make the exact same one next time. You know, that's the great thing. You have that chance to start over again.
Yeah. And then sometimes when you make those mistakes of like a higher level, I think we can admit some mistakes are bigger than others. Mm-hmm. You know, when we make those and it really sticks with us, you know, it's not pleasant to go through that at the time. But like you said, that's something that'll stick with you. That's
Yeah. And now it's been 2 years since this mistake, and I've had a great 2 years of, I've been mentally healthier too, staying away from that gossip. It's helped me a lot.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. So last question for us today. If you could make any change in schools, no matter how crazy it may sound, and with no monetary restrictions, what would it be?
All right. I'm at the middle school level. So first thing would be the bells every 40 minutes. My students would have a huge project that they wanted to complete, and they would go to the experts they needed. So every teacher at my school has skills that not a lot of people know about. You know, I know sign language. Another is a professional photographer. He's got that as a second job. Our school psychologist is in a band. You know, we do have band teachers though too. I'd love for our students to have access to a spreadsheet with everybody's staff names, their expertise, and then a time that they could meet with us one-on-one to help them with their goal for their project. And as for money, the students would name all the resources they needed, and that's where our textbook money would go. And then, speaking of books, I'd have to end the day with 20 to 30 minutes of independent reading, staff and students all sitting there together, and then, well, maybe 20 to 30 minutes right before the end of the day. Then at the very end of the day, we share with small groups what we're reading and why we're reading them and what's in them, and just be nice and cozy by the end of the day, you know?
That sounds like a wonderful way to end the day, if you ask me.
Yeah.
A great way to end the day.
Right? What a dream.
Well, fantastic. I loved it. Yeah, that was like a multi-part. There was like different layers to that one. I like
that. I was ready for that one too. You know it.
Oh, Joy. Well, again, I want to just thank you for taking some of your time to join us here at Educators Guru. I really do appreciate that. Do you have any last words or anything for our audience?
You know, everybody's going to be making those mistakes, and everybody has those dreams, and you got to pick something and just do it. Just, you know, go with it. And if you want to go for that dream, take a little notch of it, you know, like I could do reading at the end of my period every day and then talk about the books. Or we could maybe, hey, you guys are going to be late to your class because I still have something else to say. You know, here goes the bell. Forget it. Those other teachers will understand. So, yeah, little things. Just enjoy it and make sure you enjoy the students.
I love that. I love that. Sometimes personally, I get wrapped up in like the big idea that I forget sometimes those small things that get there. So when you mention all those grand ideas, I like how you just said, you know, sometimes just pick that one thing and work towards that. I
Yeah.
love that. Well,
If you
again,
pick too many, you'll be too busy.
there you go. And then it's too much for you and your students.
Right. Yeah. It's all good.
Right, Joy. Again, it's been a joy having you on your show. I'm sure you've never heard that joke before, right?
Never,
All right, wonderful. I'm glad I'm the first one. So again, thank you very much for joining us. Everybody, have a fantastic evening.
Take care.